This is Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. I'm your host, Andre Huey. On today's edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis, we take a closer look at the African migrant situation affecting both St. Kitts and Nevis and Antigua and Barbuda. A very tragic incident occurred recently where a boat carrying 32 people, believed to be African migrants, capsized with 13 currently missing and only about 16 persons who were on that boat rescued. We'll be speaking with Garfield Burford, who is the Director of News and Sports at ABS TV and Radio, to find out the genesis of the situation, the backstory behind the African migrant situation in Antigua, and how Cameroonians were allegedly fleeing political persecution in their country ended up in St. Kitts and Nevis. Plus, we'll be sharing excerpts from the press conference held by the Royal St. Christopher and Nevis Police Force last week after that incident, where some of the questions that were needed to be answered were asked at that press conference. All that coming up on today's edition of Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis. But first, a break, and be right back.
Voice of the Caribbean Radio, VOC Radio. Stay locked on.
Online radio has never been this great. It's Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Tune into Voice of the Caribbean Radio for great Caribbean programs, news, entertainment, sports, and current affairs. Wake up each morning and be inspired with One Day at a Time with Kim Huey. Stay abreast with news across the Caribbean and internationally with the Caribbean News Hour, and be entertained with shows like Reggaeville, Caribbean Classics, and Jive Music Show. Visit our website, download our Android mobile app, or listen us on TuneIn Radio. There is so much more on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond. Check website or app for program schedule.
Want to buy some fresh fruits, vegetables, or ground provision, but don't have the time to go to the market or even to find parking? Look no further. Green Market and Delivery is your solution. Green Market and Delivery is an e-commerce store that sells and delivers local produce to customers in St. Kitts and Nevis. Anything you purchase, you can get fresh from the market and delivered directly to your door. Log on to www.greenmarketskn.com. Click on the e-store link, choose your items, and shop away. We have a wide array of products from fruits, vegetables, local products, spices and seasonings, and much more. Save time and energy. Shop on greenmarketskn.com, your one-stop shop for fresh local produce.
Stay abreast with news on St. Martin with FMN News. Visit www.smn-news.com for up-to-date news, scoops, opinions, and hard-hitting facts. FMN News, we tell it like it is. Visit our website, www.smn-news.com.
Coming to you on your laptops, phones, and computers, VOC Radio on voiceofthecaribbean.net.
Welcome back to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis. As promised you, we'll head into our interview with Garfield Burford. He's the Director of News at ABS TV and Radio in Antigua and Barbuda. We spoke to him about the genesis of this migrant situation affecting both St. Kitts and Nevis and Antigua and Barbuda. All right, so we have on the line with us Garfield Burford, Director of News and Sports at ABS TV and Radio in Antigua and Barbuda. Garfield, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andre. It's a pleasure to always be with you and to update your audiences on the developments that are happening here in this country, I'm pretty sure, and across the region as well.
Yes. Well, of course, we want to focus on the very unfortunate tragedy that took place last week with the African migrants who were reportedly on a boat heading, from what reports we were getting from the police, to the USVI. The latest report, of course, is that two Antiguans are being held as suspects or being looked at as suspects in what is believed to be a human trafficking, human smuggling situation. Can you, first of all, tell us on the ground in Antigua and Barbuda, what has been happening? What are the authorities saying about the incident? What are people on the ground saying about the incident?
Right. Just to be sure, Andre, the authorities here, and I'm pretty sure in St. Kitts as well, are determining that it is, on the face of it, a migrant smuggling operation as opposed to a human trafficking one. They're trying to make the distinction because they've indicated that some individuals have been using the term human trafficking interchangeably with migrant smuggling, which is unfortunately vindicated. These individuals who would have willingly, would have on their own volition, tried to enter into an agreement to be smuggled elsewhere, obviously part of a plan to reach possibly the United States ultimately. So that seems to have been what happened. In terms of what the authorities here are saying, the investigation ongoing, they're working closely with the authorities and the law enforcement operatives in St. Kitts and Nevis as well. It's a transnational investigation. So Antigua, Barbuda, St. Kitts, Nevis, and as well the French territories as well, especially Guadeloupe. Martinique was involved through the Maritime Rescue Coordination Center, MRCC. It's also possibly involved in an investigation as well. So both Martinique and Guadeloupe, the French territories, are also involved. It's a transnational investigation which takes into account a lot of coordination, a lot of collaboration among these various law enforcement agencies. What is clear at this point is that, if you give me a minute, I'll take you back to the genesis of the situation. So here it is that Antigua Airways was started by the government, or was started by an entity called, or a gentleman called Marvelous Mike Press Limited. And it entered into a deal with the Antigua and Barbuda government, where the government would have had any sort of profit that the entity made, the government would have gone 20% of it, 80% would have gone to the investor. So in other words, the investor would have risked his capital, risked his wherewithal to be able to establish the airline. And then the government, if it is profitable, would get 20% of it. The Gaston Bernard administration has said that what it was trying to do was to establish an air bridge, a link between Africa and the Caribbean. And this itself went back as far back as 4 or 5 years ago, when there would have been very clear efforts made, very deliberate efforts made to establish greater linkages and greater areas of collaboration, functional cooperation with the African continent. For example, there would have been certain ambassadors who would have been posted, ambassadors to the African Union, to Ethiopia, etc. And this one, there was also in 2021, while Prime Minister Brown was chairman of CARICOM, he had held the first Africa CARICOM summit when Uhuru Kenyatta at the time was, I think, the head of the African Union. And he of course, would have met virtually, of course, because that was during the time of the COVID-19 pandemic. But CARICOM and Africa deliberated at that time and determined that they would be trying to establish greater linkages. Then we fast forward to Antigua Airways, which was a venture aimed at trying to establish a great, more direct link between Africa and the Caribbean. Because what has been repeatedly said is that Africa and the Caribbean, of course, have historical and umbilical connections because, of course, of the transatlantic slave trade, and because we're both in the global south. But it is extremely difficult to travel between both regions. And so Antigua was trying to be a pioneer in this, in the region, in terms of establishing a carrier that would, of course, fly across the Atlantic in a different way to what had happened centuries ago, when Africans were, of course, enslaved and taken in the hulls of ships and packed like sardines and taken across the Atlantic to the Caribbean, to the New World. This was a different kind. This was a transatlantic operation with a difference. This was freedom for Africans who would have had their own self-determination, the Caribbean, which would have had its own self-determination, marching into the future. That was the lofty ideal, the hope of trying to establish that link. What had happened was that the government had indicated that by the time it started, it established charter flights first, because all the arrangements were not in place in relation to establishing regular service. So charter flights were in operation. It indicated that apparently there was an opportunistic carrier called High Flying, which saw this as an opportunity, saw the establishment of the charter flights from Antigua Airways as an opportunity to have other migrants who were obviously trying to get to the US or get to other destinations. And they would use Antigua, obviously, as a gateway. And so by the time the government said that, this is what the report that St. John's is saying, by the time it realized what was happening, it was realizing that these individuals had come as tourists, indicating that they were tourists. They'd been landed properly. They, got the visas and so on as were required. And when the government realized that they're not quite tourists, they're really opportunistically trying to get to another destination, so using Antigua as a kind of transit point to get to somewhere else, it then suspended the flights. But by the time it suspended the charter flights, it had over 600 individuals who were migrants / tourists, or indicated that they were tourists, but then turned out to have been migrants, many from Cameroon, who of course were fleeing persecution in a very, very bloody civil conflict that's taking place there. So they were trying to get out of the country and get to, for example, the US, where they possibly could seek asylum status. The government indicated that having been left with a situation where there are these migrants in the country. They are already in the country. What does it then do? It reached out to them. The Gaston-Brown administration said it reached out to them, offering the possibility of working out an arrangement where they could stay and work, trying to assimilate them into society. However, at the same time, indicating that those who wanted to leave, those who wanted to return home, to be repatriated, would be given the opportunity to be returned home. In fact, two Antigua Airways flights came back with a hope of trying to get some of the individuals repatriated, but they chose not to do so. They indicated that they did not want to return because some of them were, of course, fleeing persecution and so on. So what we have is a situation where there are these migrants who are obviously in the country looking to move on. Some would have wanted to stay, and some would have wanted to move on to another country. However, not many took the opportunity to return home because, of course, of the situation there. Then we fast forward to what happened last week, Tuesday, when unbeknownst to the authorities, according to the authorities, this is what they've reported, unbeknownst to them, some of these migrants would have taken an opportunity to have boarded a boat, obviously with some sort of pecuniary consideration, some sort of financial consideration to whoever is behind the venture, in a migrant smuggling operation. So they chose to be smuggled out of the country to somewhere else. And it is felt that they were trying to head to the U.S. Virgin Islands. It is believed as well that the boat left Antigua. Those details have not been definitively corroborated at this point. So it's not yet confirmed whether or not the boat left Antigua. It is believed that that's what happened. It's not definitive whether or not the boat was heading to the USVI, into St. Thomas in the USVI. It is believed that that was the intended destination. Either way, obviously a very sad, very tragic development unfolded when the boat capsized, sank, three individuals confirmed to have died. Their bodies were fished from the water. 16 were recovered, were rescued, and the other were about 13 or so missing and feared dead. The search has been suspended, as we said. So what we've had indicated is, and the government, by the way, here, the authorities here are saying that they're continuing the investigation. They've extended sympathies to the families of those who would have perished. And the government also encouraging the other migrants here to say, look, we're dissuading you against pursuing a similar venture, because obviously it is fraught with danger. And so to embark on such a journey across the water in rickety boats and small boats, obviously it was overcrowded. Because when you look at the boat, we had a picture of it on our web, on our social media pages. When you look at it, very small boat, 30 foot, probably about 6 feet wide, 30 feet in length, about 6 feet in width. And I mean, obviously not intended to carry 32 people. And also not having the requisite safety gear and safety vests and so on. So obviously when it capsized, it would have been a recipe for disaster. And so it is almost miraculous as well that 16 were rescued. And 16, there have been 16 survivors, of course, who are being held in kits as we speak. So an ongoing investigation, the government saying, look, and by the way, in terms of the over 600 who were here before in Antigua, the authorities believe that that figure has dwindled significantly. There are some who would have left legally through established ports, and others who would have, might have, there's a speculation that others might have succeeded in being smuggled out of the country on other similar operations. It's not definitive, but it is felt that some have actually left illegally through some of these routes. And of course, it exposes the issue, Andre, here in Antigua, in St. Kitts as well, all over the Caribbean, of porous borders for a chain of islands, an archipelago of islands, with it's extremely difficult to have marine and air assets to be able to always be monitoring the full length and breadth of those borders.
For clarity, so the let's go back to the story of the charters. The opportunistic individual or company that would have come in and asserted themselves as a legitimate charter, how did they manage then to carry out that flight under the guise of Antigua Airways when that obviously was not sanctioned by the government? Or at least that's the report we're getting out of the government.
Well, that's the report from the government here. And all the logistics, all the details have not been indicated. But what has been said is that this entity would have used the opportunity to have jumped at the flight, the flight bridge, the air bridge, which had been created, to allow these migrants to then get on board and then come here. By the time the authorities realized what was happening, that look, there was a second entity that was involved, Then it had suspended the flights, but by then there were two other flights which had come in with individuals who were looking to, of course, use here as a transit point to then go on elsewhere. And so those details not immediately clear, Andre, in terms of how exactly HyFly was able to use Antigua Airways as an opportunity to get other migrants on. Economic migrants or conflict migrants, as they've been called in some cases, onto these flights, who would have purported to be tourists and so would have fallen under the umbrella of what the administration had wanted to achieve when it had set up this air bridge with it, through Antigua Airways, but then, of course, turned out to have not been the case. So that is the subject of continuing investigations in terms of how exactly that happened to ensure that it doesn't happen again. For all intents and purposes, as the Prime Minister has indicated, that Antigua Airways now is in abeyance at this point, of pretty much defunct, as he's indicated, until and unless there can be further and better particulars. The government said, look, it's not abandoned the idea of having this air bridge. It says it's definitely going to go with this air bridge, but it has to realize, or it realizes that it has to now perhaps do things a little bit differently to ensure that this thing is prevented going forward.
Right. Now, to look at then, Garfield, the situation at hand, obviously, and I did watch a report that you did where the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda had indicated that he's willing to receive the if the government here in St. Kitts Nevis decides to repatriate the rescued migrants, that Antigua and Barbuda will be open to receiving them. But on the ground, though, what's the situation on the ground in terms of how are citizens and residents responding to the African migrants that are in the country and possibly the ones that may be repatriated from St. Kitts?
Right, and that's an interesting question, Andre. I think that there has been a plurality of views, a dichotomy, well, perhaps a dichotomy would be more the appropriate term. There have been two views essentially along the way. There have been some in the country who say, look, we're all Africans. It's an opportunity to embrace our African brothers and sisters and cousins. It's an opportunity for there to be a reconnection with our past and to embrace the African continent. And those individuals have argued that it is hypocritical on the part of others who have criticized the move because they sometimes conveniently and opportunistically pretend to be to be Africans and to embrace their African heritage, but at the same time they criticize the venture to try to establish that closer connection with Africa. So there are those who are sympathetic and those who are supportive of the move. Others have indicated that, look, the government did not go about it the right way, and that the government bears some responsibility. In fact, there have been calls for the Prime Minister's resignation over the entire saga, of course, which culminated in what happened last week, Tuesday, off St. Kitts. Prime Minister shrugged off those calls, saying, look, his administration had a noble objective to establish this air bridge with the African continent. And if there has been an attempt by migrants surreptitiously to try to be smuggled out of the country on their own volition, the government cannot be held accountable for their actions and the actions of those who are behind the migrant smuggling operation. So there's a dichotomy of views in the country about how to, one, the genesis of the entire affair, and there has been some sort of politicization of it as well. I mean, the main opposition, United Progressive Party, has pilloried the government, has castigated the government very, very scathingly in relation to how it has handled the entire matter. In fact, our understanding is that there is likely to be some sort of there's supposed to be ratcheting up the pressure on the Brown administration with a protest march in coming possibly days or weeks. But there has been this criticism, political criticism of the government. But apart from the politics, there have been some who have expressed concern. The Prime Minister is saying, look, he understands the concerns because he understands that if there are members of the society who are independent-minded, who think that there has been a challenge here with an influx of migrants or an influx of visitors first, because they were purporting to be tourists. So an influx of visitors, then they realize that they're not quite tourists, but migrants. He understands the concerns. He's saying he's totally fine with questions being asked about the entire thing. He says the government's approach and intention was always noble and clear and fair and transparent. He's however asked for there to be a kind of de-acceleration or de-escalation of the political rhetoric, which I mean, from that same interview that the story that you referenced, you'd have seen, you'd have heard the Prime Minister say that he's asked the political his political opposition to be to de-escalate that rhetoric and to essentially abandoned the rhetoric that there has been blood on his own hands for what has happened, because the Prime Minister is saying absolutely not the case. I mean, he tried to be compassionate to the West Africans. In fact, some of them have actually sent letters of commendation and thanks and gratitude to his administration for the efforts being made to assimilate them into the society. Some, by the way, have started to work in the country. Some of them were working as security guards. One was even working at the area where the Prime Minister lives. So when he was actually going home into the property where he works, one of the West Africans didn't realize that he was a Prime Minister, so stopped him to ask him who he was. And then the Prime Minister said, jokingly, he said to him, "Well, by the way, it's myself who, along with my cabinet, made the decision for you to be able to stay, to be able to work." So he said, "Oh, you're the head of the government." And then he was able to have a conversation with him. So I think that the Prime Minister is saying his government has been compassionate. And if anything, his government's compassion has been taken for granted and has been exploited and misused by individuals who are opportunistic. However, the opposition is saying, look, the government did not do its due diligence. It should be held accountable for what has happened. It is calling it a debacle and a fiasco. But again, that is the level of the political to and fro and the political oscillation and of course, rhetoric and dialectics. But of course, not dissimilar from any other country in the Caribbean where you have very, very vigorous politics involved. But again, that issue has been politicized. But apart from the political fray and apart from the political dialectics, there have been, of course, concerns expressed by some individuals in the society broadly about how to proceed going forward. I should say, Andre, very quickly, before you come in with your next question, so sorry if I've taken a little while to answer the question, but I should say that the government has invited two UN agencies who are actually here with a team, a rapid response team. That's the International Organization for Migration and the UNHCR, that's the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Both agencies have sent a team to assess the migrants here, to look at what are their immediate needs, possibly also their skills that they bring to the table, because some of them are very, very skilled too. I've heard about building engineers, and I've heard about people who are very skilled in various areas who have actually gotten involved, who are here as well. So the IOM and the UNHCR will be assessing their skills. We'll be looking at how many they are and to make recommendations to the government about proceeding. We should also say, however, that as I mentioned earlier, the numbers have dwindled because some have left legally through legal means and some have left quite possibly through illegal means as well, even before what happened with this boat tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the, and quickly, the ones who are there who have decided to, well, you know what, they're going to make their life here. They are here now. This was not where they wanted to be or intended to be, but they're here. The government has given them an opportunity to assimilate in society. What are they saying? I don't know if you've been able to get any feedback from those who are there and who have decided, well, this is where I'm going to be for the time being.
Right. Some of them, to be clear, Andre, have expressed concerns about the level of vitriol, the level of hostility even that has been directed at them. Some individuals in the society have made it very clear to them that they're not welcomed here. And they have expressed some reservations about that. In fact, some concerns about that the approach which has been taken by some members of the society. So there is that as well. So some of them are perhaps not as eager to speak publicly right now as they had been before. To be clear, the other members of the society have embraced them and have made it possible, you know, we've given them kinds of assistance, various kinds of assistance. I mean, you know, taking them into their homes, or some of them have made accommodation available for them and, you know, pointed them to where they can rent houses and so on. And, you know, taking them around, showed them around and have had a talk with them. So I think what is clear is that, as I said, there has been that dichotomy. So some of them are not as eager to speak now as they were before because there has been some level of hostility towards them. In fact, before the general elections, as you know, the general elections were held here in January, the 18th of January, which resulted in a narrow victory for the incumbent ABLP. It was returned to office with a narrower majority, with a narrow majority of a one-seat majority, 9-6-1-1, meaning 9 for the ABLP, 6 for the UPP, 1 independent in Asset Michael, and 1 for the Barbuda People's Movement. So even before that, there had been a speculation and an even accusation in some quarters that they were here to vote in the general elections. So some people had actually brought them into the political fray and were parading their pictures on social media to say, look, be very careful, watch the vote very carefully, because these individuals seem as if they're here to vote. So from then, there had been some mistrust, some vitriol even, that had been spewed at them. I suppose they are trying to find their way through the raindrops. But as I said, apart from that, it has not all been vitriol. There have been areas and very numerous instances of compassion which has been directed at them, and which have been, people have embraced them and warmly encouraged them and welcomed them and talked to them and trying to assimilate them into society as well. So there's been, as I said, that difference in terms of views and opinions. What is clear, though, I think generally and broadly, Andre, is that most of them who are here, this is not their final destination. That much is clear. And I suppose that explains why some chose the route, dangerous as it was, fraught with risk as it was, and we saw what happened. That's why some chose that route, because they are ultimately intending to go to the U.S. To the point, the very well-known case in Trinidad and Tobago with the asylum case there, or the injunction which was sought on the behalf of some, about four of them, four Cameroonians. There's a well-known case. They actually landed here in Antigua first. So from Antigua to Grenada, then to Trinidad, then to Suriname. They returned back from Suriname, sent back to Trinidad and Tobago. Trinidad was trying to deport them at the 11th hour, literally at the 11th hour. There was a high court injunction which barred the deportation of them pending further hearings and so on into their asylum claims. So to be clear, their ultimate objective is to reach particular countries, which is not, and those countries do not include Antigua, Barbuda, do not include St. Kitts, Nevis. They ultimately want to reach to the U.S. or as close as possible to the U.S. As they can get. So I think that has been expressed by several of them. So even if they are working here, by the way, to be fair, there are a few who are amenable, who are open to work, to staying and working here and being assimilated into the society. But I think mostly their ultimate objective is not to be here, but to go to the U.S.
With this situation, we've seen also the situation with Haitian migrants who also ended up here in St. Kitts and Nevis. And we've just had a story coming out this week where Belize is now saying that they're introduced travel restrictions on Jamaicans and Haitians, particularly Haitians, because of the migrant situation with them trying to get to the U.S. and using Belize as a transshipment point or a conveyance point to the United States. What does this say? And just from an observer, as a journalist and as someone who's covering stories of this nature, what does it say of the migrant situation in the Caribbean and how the Caribbean is becoming a somewhat of a transshipment point between migrants who want to get to North America and who are escaping, various socioeconomic crises in their respective countries. Now we're seeing not just Haitians, but now Africans involved.
Right. The history of human civilization, Andre, and if I, at the risk of sounding a little bit grandiose in terms of this response, has been about movement of people. However, what we've seen in recent times, in recent years, has been a kind of movement of people on steroids. This has been significantly accelerated for various reasons. I mean, conflicts, the push for a better life, the desire, the yearning for a better life. So there has been this, as I said, acceleration of those efforts. What is clear as well is that this issue requires a region-wide response, because it is a region-wide phenomenon. All countries in the region, and I spoke with a senior member of the security forces yesterday, who's indicated that, look, these issues are being looked at across the RSS, across the OECS and Barbados, and as well across CARICOM as well, because it requires, and you were right to mention what's taking place in Belize, which is also a CARICOM country in Central America. There is obviously a significant movement of people, even more significant than before, who are trying to jump at every opportunity that they can get to a better life, and or to possibly escape challenges where they are. And it's clear that this requires, and this will require, even more concerted action. If you ask me, I don't think there has been enough concerted action on this, or certainly not one which I've heard about. Perhaps the authorities are keeping the cards close to their chest in terms of what they're doing on this issue, but it is obvious that even if they are working together, they have to ratchet up that collaboration, because migrants are looking at ingenious ways to move among the islands. There's a lot of movement on the face of it within the OECS on these boats. And it is crucial. It is incumbent on the authorities, using the RSS as a vehicle, the regional security system, to try to help each other. So literally each of the countries in the OECS have to be their brother's keeper. Because look at, for example, Antigua. Antigua is 108 square miles. Antigua itself, and another 62 or so for Barbuda, so 170 or so square miles across both islands. But you're looking at 110,000 square miles in terms of maritime space. That is extraordinarily difficult to police and to monitor. And so the capabilities obviously have to be bolstered through regional collaboration, regional working together, and information sharing, sharing assets, functional cooperation. And that is obviously going to be the way to, as much as possible, effectively address this issue. It's never going to be perfect, because there's no way that any island in the Caribbean will be able to fully police and fully monitor its borders to prevent this from happening. The best bet is to reduce it, to minimize the number of individuals who are moving in the region. In some cases in the region, it may be human trafficking. In the case of this particular matter that we're talking about in relation to the West Africans, it is obviously migrant smuggling, which the authorities have made, as I mentioned earlier, have made a distinction with. But whatever it is in different parts of the region, as I said, whether it is at the level of CARICOM, whether it is at the level of the OAS, in terms of, because it's an America's issue as well, because you're having people move from South America up through Central America into Mexico, into the US. And for example, if you look at that same situation in Belize, they're being used as a pass-through point, as a conduit. So individuals are moving up from south of them, and then through their territory into Mexico, into the US, and so on. And so there has to be collaboration, as I said, at the OAS level, so at the hemispheric level, at the CARICOM level, at the OECS level, and through using the RSS as a vehicle. And to try to cauterize this problem, you're not going to get rid of it completely. Let's be realistic. You just can't police those levels of maritime space, even with the best will in the world, because you don't have the assets. But you're going to have to try to reduce it. And so, as I said, it's very clear that this issue, this migrant tragedy, it's so sad that it's taken a tragedy to have exposed the issue more and to have thrust the issue into greater spotlight. That it is clear that there has been quite a bit of this happening across various countries in the region. I think that at the risk of being crude, perhaps the only positive that can be remotely drawn from this is that it is going to precipitate a greater regional response to the issue. And it has thrust the issue firmly into the spotlight as an exigency, as an issue that needs urgent attention, that demands urgent collaboration. And let's see how this one pans out. A final point, Andre, is that the IOM, the International Organization for Migration, is also launching its network for migrants, or its network looking at trying to get a better handle on this situation, to try to get into the figures, get into the numbers, to understand the trends that are involved. Why are migrants moving? What are the kind of push factors and the pull factors which are involved? So it is good. More information, more analysis is always good. Let's hope that that can be put to good use in terms of the authorities turning the information and the statistics into action, meaningful action, functional cooperation to try to address it.
All right. Well, Garfield, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. That's Garfield Burford of ABS Radio and TV. We'll take another break. When we come back, we'll begin that sharing excerpts from that press conference, police press conference, held here in St. Kitts and Nevis last week.
Simply the best sound in Caribbean radio. This is VOC Radio.
Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis, a talk show and current affairs program focusing on St. Kitts and Nevis, the Caribbean, and international news. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, join host Andre Huey as he delves into topical issues of the day. We'll open the lines so you can call in and be part of the discussion. And he'll feature guests each week to help shed light on the various topics of discussion. Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis with Andre Huey, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., with rebroadcasts on Wednesdays and Fridays, also at 10 a.m., on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Also listen on our Android mobile app and TuneIn Radio. Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
I'm Making It Happen with Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio. Get insightful information with guests from the U.S. Virgin Islands. That's I'm Making It Happen with host Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. with rebroadcasts at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
The Entrepreneurial You, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. with a rebroadcast at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
You're listening to Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net.
Welcome back to Let's Talk St. Kitts Nevis. As promised you, we'll now enter into the press conference, sharing the excerpt of a press conference held by the Royal St. Christopher Nevis Police Force, starting with the questions asked about the incident, the boat tragedy that occurred last week.
Well, SKN Vibes, I just want to start off quickly with something that you said. I'm guessing it's for corrections for the record. You said six. Is it six or 16 people who would have been?
It should be 16. Sorry. 16. My bad.
Okay. And while you're at the mic, so at this point, you can say that 19 persons have been recovered in general from this morning.
That is correct.
Okay. I want to quickly go to two questions on this same topic. One, can you say what sort of interactions the police and immigration would have had with those persons? Because the reports that we have been getting is that the vessel that sank this morning would have been stolen from Antigua, would have also been stolen from Guatemala. Can you, or Martinique, can you speak to that?
Okay, I will let the commander of the defense, Colonel Comrie, answer that question.
Good afternoon. Well, thanks for your question. From our initial report, is that the vessel would have left Guadeloupe sometime probably a week ago, and it was in Antigua for some time, and the vessel would have left Antigua last evening. This morning, the vessel was reported missing from Antigua.
Okay, and can you say whether or not those deceased and the entire group of 32 were actually Africans from Antigua, who came from Africa but were residing in Antigua?
From our initial report, the 16 persons that we recovered, two was Antiguans and 14 was Cameroonians. We don't know the three bodies.
Okay, and at around what time you guys receive or would have found those bodies?
They would have been after 9 this morning.
Thanks.
And as we speak, we are on the scene searching for more bodies with the assistance of the French aircraft.
Cal Berzel, is it Broadcasting Corporation? Just to follow up, can you give us an idea of what exactly happened with the vessel?
The vessel has since sunk.
But do we know how?
No.
Okay.
That wasn't reported. What caused the distress?
Okay. Another question. It was mentioned that there have been 3 homicides in the last few days. What is being done within perhaps the communities in terms of policing to make sure that this does not happen again? Is there a way for the police to probably have a sense of things that may be happening to be able to curb this kind of thing in the future?
Okay, what we are doing we call hotspot policing, where we are engaging and involving the communities on twofold, in that we are giving the assurance that we are with them and providing the security, and having that level of trust with the community, because in order for us to tackle crime, we must have trust from the persons in the community. Having said that, we are, as I said, identifying persons and see how we can engage them. You know, the government has the alternative program, alternative pathway program, that again, we are partnering with the administrators to see how best they could assist us in that regard.
I want to go back. Oh, yes, Glenn Bart, SK Newsline. What we're missing from this entire story really is what transpired in terms of the communication between the vessel and Coast Guard, all various Coast Guards from Antigua and Barbuda and St. Kitts, and there's also the involvement you mentioned of Martinique. Explain what was the communication situation on that matter.
Thanks again for your question. Apparently, the vessel got in distress some 20 miles off St. Kitts, and in so doing, they would have sent out an SOS. And it was picked up by Martinique, Fort de France in Martinique, which is our search and rescue center, coordinating center. And they will in turn, will have sent out a message that was picked up by Antigua, ourselves, and also a vessel that was in the area.
Now, with regards to your equipment, what asset did you take to go and do your rescue services?
We dispatch our safe boat. It's a 33.
It's a what?
Safe boat, a 33-foot vessel with 300. Can do in excess of 30 knots.
So how long did it take to reach the scene?
And I'm not sure, because it was in the wee hours of the morning, and it was dark, so you have to go with drive with care.
Okay. I'm puzzled though. Martinique is quite a long way away from St. Kitts. In fact, the boat is much closer to St. Kitts than it is to Martinique. Why didn't the communication for the distress picked up by our Coast Guard?
The vessel is a French vessel, French registered vessel. So apparently there's equipment in it that communicate to Martinique.
All right, so there is no international distress signal that is accepted anywhere in the world?
Channel 16. However, if there's a, what do you call it, EPIRB and the vessel, that Once it's submerged, it will give off distress, and that will be sent to Martinique. And Martinique will in turn will, because there's a center for coordinated center for search and rescue. They will receive that signal, and they will convert it into voice and send it out to us.
Okay. One other issue on that. Some years ago, I think probably about a year, 2 years perhaps, there was an indication that the Coast Guard were to receive some new vessels coming out of Europe. What has become of that project?
I'm not aware of
that. Not aware of that.
Yeah, we are receiving vessels from Europe. I know we went and do a preliminary check on some vessels, and in Holland. And based on, once we were there, we had some issues with the company, so we discontinued that negotiation.
Mm. So what's the current situation now in terms of acquiring necessary vessels?
I traveled to India recently. I went to Calcutta to check out the vessel, and that presently is in negotiation. And we also observing different avenues in terms of getting a vessel to replace our flagship Coast Guard Credit Store.
Okay, a couple of follow-up questions. One, where are those that were rescued, were they brought to shore in St. Kitts, and where are they being housed? And can you address, there were early reports in the media regionally that the vessel was heading to the USVI. Can you speak to that, as well as the fact that there were reports that the distress signal was picked up by a passing vessel or something of that nature, before I continue with the police?
Initial report is that the vessel departed Antigua for St. Thomas with 32 persons on board. The distress signal, as I said, it was received by Martinique, which we broadcasted it, and we pick it up as well as Antigua and a vessel.
So it was not, so the reports are not correct when it said that it was the vessel, a luxury vessel, that actually got that distress signal first before the authorities?
I can't speak to that. What I was advised is that Martinique got the information, and then we broadcast it and we pick it up.
Okay. To the commissioner, you spoke about building relationship and partnership in the fight against crime, but over the last, you're taking over the police at a crossroads when it comes to the behavior of officers within the police force, and that is what, to an extent, is creating the distrust amongst the communities across both St. Kitts and Nevis. We had a couple of issues last year, for example, or during Carnival, where we had an officer basically technically slamming an individual on the ground based on the videos. Then you had, probably earlier that year or the year before, you had an officer standing on the back of another person in a hot concrete drain. How are you, as the leader of this law enforcement body in St. Kitts and Nevis, going to be seeking to, one, address the behavior of officers in your police force, and two, also build that trust that has been eroded somewhat by the behavior of officers in the police force? Second question has to do with guns. It was said early last year, that there were homicides that were occurring over the last decade was being commissioned by guns. There were double-digit percentage of crimes being committed by guns. How is the police force going to be working to alleviate that specific problem, in light of the fact that we don't produce guns? Bahamas has been complaining. Regional leaders have now moved to basically take American gun manufacturers to court over this issue, because it seems as though somehow it's coming through the borders. So how are you going to work to deal with that?
Okay, let me deal with the first question with regards to the behavior of police officers. Police officers are not above the law. And we have established a unit within the organization called the Professional Standards Department, which is tasked with investigating police officers who have been unprofessional towards the members of the community. And that is one of the areas that I intend to beef up and have some enforcement in that area. Because if we are promoting community policing and police officers are being unprofessional with members of the communities, it defeats the whole purpose. So that is the first and foremost of accountability and respect, okay, with respect to that. With regard to the gun, yes, I'm aware of some two Caribbean countries along with Mexico taking the U.S. to court. This has to be a holistic approach. We're going to have to use a lot of technology, but at the same time, we have to have to do with education. We have to educate our communities as well, because guns are not the way we should go. Guns were made to kill, okay? And guns by themselves cannot kill. It takes people to kill people with guns. So what I would say is that I am going to resort to technology, whereas I'm thinking about enhancing the capabilities at the enforcement agencies with respect to the police and customs, because it appears that some of the guns are coming through our legal ports. So we have to stamp out that as well. Okay? So we have to deal with that and a more holistic approach.
Okay, a quick follow-up. Can you say how many officers or instances of misconduct were placed before the commission or the body within the police force, accountability,
professional standards.
How many officers or cases were reported to that body, example, for last year? And how many officers were reprimanded for not being accountable and respectful to the police force and the uniform that they're wearing?
Okay, with regards to the discipline of officers, I don't have the figure at this time. But for the past 2 years, we have not had much disposal of cases in that regard. And I believe that is an area where I will have to strengthen when it comes to the disposal of these matters.
Commissioner, one of the challenges that was the police force may have been experiencing over the years was the generally the low detection rate on major crimes. Do you see any, when you look at your records now, do you see any change in that direction? Are we increasing the number of cases that are being solved? And then secondly, what is happening in terms of professional training? And I'm not talking about general police training, I'm talking about specific training to criminal investigations, forensics, and that kind of thing. What's going on that stage?
Okay, and with regard to specialized training, I have a lot of focus is on that, because I believe that, okay, we were somewhat handicapped because we only, in some cases, we had one person trained. So I want to have a more diverse field to choose from when it comes to that type of specialized training. I would like to see much more persons trained. I know for the past 2 years, as I said, that had hampered our training and development. But that is presently, training is one of the things I'm looking for, I've identified in going forward. Not only specialized training, but overall training, because some of the complaints I have had with regard to the police officers, the way they communicate with the public. There's a great need for customer service and delivery in that regard.
Okay. And the other matter relates to, similar to what you're saying, police and the community. When you walk downtown and you meet a police officer, you say good morning, they say nothing to you. I am beginning to wonder if this is the kind of instructions that are given not to speak to the communities. But it kind of sends a kind of signal that, hey, we're not supposed to mix, we're not supposed to talk. And so it leads into the psyche of people not necessarily wanting to cooperate or collaborate with the police. So maybe we're getting mixed signals here.
Okay. Remember, the police is the police office come from the community. And to me, that's something along with I've observed with our young people as well. Because as police officers, we are told to greet persons, to be respectful. That is where I was trained, to say good morning, good afternoon. Because it's something you have to have, because when crimes are committed, we go to the public. 90% of the times, the police are not present. And we can't wait until when something happens to go and speak to people. We must always have that line of communication. So that is something that we'll have to work on. As I said, our customer service need building.
Okay, Commissioner, there has been a problem for years, especially with the police force. More specifically, outside your office window. A lot of tickets have been issued time and time again to people who've been parking really bad. But yet, your officers, I'm not going to single out anyone, your officers have been doing the same thing And it's a reoccurring problem, even though it was stopped and continued sometime after that. The parking on Lozak Road outside Warner Park on the yellow lines, not only police vehicles, but government vehicles as well. What is your plans more specifically to deal with that, one, and two, the issue of the traffic problem, especially speeding, one, and two, drinking and driving, because apparently that's the cause of the speeding in most instances and accidents. What's your plan to tackle those three issues, okay, basically?
One of my hallmarks is road safety. I don't believe the police are above the law, okay? But sometimes persons believe customs become norm. My approach to it would be to speak to my officer, a sit-down talk with my officers, because if we are to lead, we must lead by example, okay? That's with Lozak Road, because it has been a perennial problem for some time. I know that I have just been appointed Commissioner of Police, and I'm building myself, because the police, the public expect great things. The police must lead. With regard to speeding, my approach will be is to equip the police with the necessary tools, radars, and we have to do educational programs, because it's not the enforcement is the of the law, but to have the educated community. If you're gonna leave home at 7 to go work for 7:30, and you know the traffic gonna be on the road, you leave earlier, because speed and you get an accident you don't reach. So we have to educate our public, because vehicles are very expensive. And what was the next one?
I think you answered both of them. Okay. You answered both right. Questions.
Commissioner, as you just mentioned, you just stepped into the role. Mm-hmm. What challenges have you encountered so far, and what is your greatest challenge, and what is your main focus at the moment?
Okay, some of the challenges are in adjusting. Everybody wants to see the commissioner, and there are a lot of engagement, because you have to let's set the platform on which I am going to lead. I intend to lead by enhancing some of the products that we have had. For example, the crime prevention, community policing, road safety, human development, the use of technology. You have the better collaboration with other agencies. The seventh aspect of my leadership would be evidence-based policing. What that is saying is that we're going to use data to guide our decision making. We're going to look at our crime statistics and let's say where crimes are committed, who are the persons involved to make our decision. We're going to look, I'm looking at, as you mentioned, the police behavior. One of the things I'm contemplating is camera, body cams for police officers when they engage the public, because cameras will give us a better picture of what we are dealing with. So it's a holistic approach I want to deal with, because no matter what I do as commissioner, I want it to reflect a true picture of law enforcement, not as a combative arm of government, but an embracing arm with the communities.
You have been listening to Let's Talk St. Kitts & Nevis here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. I was your host, Andre Huey. Thank you for listening. You can listen again to this program, a rebroadcast at 10 a.m. Wednesday and Friday. And you can also listen on demand by visiting our website, voiceofthecaribbean.net, clicking on Listen to Our Shows on Demand, and you'll find us right there. Thanks again for listening to Let's Talk St. Kitts & Nevis here on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net, reaching the Caribbean and beyond. Stay tuned.
The best sound in Caribbean radio. This is VOC Radio.
Let's talk St. Kitts and Nevis, a talk show and current affairs program focusing on St. Kitts and Nevis, the Caribbean, and international news. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, join host Andre Huey as he delves into topical issues of the day. We'll open the lines so you can call in and be part of the discussion. And he'll feature guests each week to help shed light on the various topics of discussion. Let's Talk St. Kitts and Nevis with Andre Huey, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., with rebroadcasts on Wednesdays and Fridays, also at 10 a.m., on Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net. Also listen on our Android mobile app and TuneIn Radio. Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
I'm Making It Happen with Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio. Get insightful information with guests from the U.S. Virgin Islands. That's I'm Making It Happen with host Nicole Tyson, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. with rebroadcasts at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
The Entrepreneurial You, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. with a rebroadcast at 4 p.m. on Voice of the Caribbean Radio, reaching the Caribbean and beyond.
You're listening to Voice of the Caribbean Radio at voiceofthecaribbean.net.